Welcome to Holden Village. In the Creekside Room, today's speaker is Jeannie Olson, and she will be doing a session entitled Angels, an Extension of the Arm of God. So let's listen in on Jeannie.
I am thrilled to be able to teach this, but it was even more fun teaching this when people didn't know anything about angels, which is 8 years ago when I started this study, no one knew anything about angels except Catholics. And I want to say that I have a feeling that you will not forget some of what I teach you today, but that you will forget me. And I tell that story, and I say that because 2 years ago I taught this class here at Holden, and the first week I taught it, I was sitting out in the village, right out here on the lawn, and I was sitting by myself, and one of the people who I had seen in my class, this class, came up and sat down and started talking to me. And I got to preface this by saying, about 2.5 years ago, I started praying that I would never get in the way of the material that I was presenting. And I felt that this was a gift that God had given me, that he asked me to share with other people, but that I didn't ever want to get in the way of the material. I don't know how any better to explain that. So I had been praying this prayer. Well, this person came up and sat down and started talking to me that I had seen in my class. And there had been about 50. It was an evening class, and so it was loaded with people. And he started telling me about his time in the village and what it was like. And he said, I went to this class 2 days ago about angels. And he started telling me about it. And he said, it was a really great experience. He said, were you there? And I looked at him and I said, I taught the class. And he looked at me incredulously, like he wasn't sure I was telling the truth. And well, I sort of kind of laughed, and after this exchange, I thought, well, Lord, I guess you've answered my prayer. You know, I'm not getting in the way of the material. These people didn't even know I was presenting the class. So we were here for our normal 2 or 3 weeks or whatever, and I was leaving the village and had taught it again. And I went to sit next to somebody down the boat, and this person had been there, I found out, for about 2 or 3 months. And she started to talk, what were some of the things that you experienced in the village and what was it like and high points and stuff. And then she said, one of the things I did this week, she said, I went to this angel class. I hope you went to it because it was one of the high points of my week. And I looked at her and I thought, I said, well, yes, I did attend that class. And I thought, why bother? You know, it wasn't important that she knew that I taught the class. And the Lord was affirming the fact that I wasn't getting in the way of what I was teaching. So you will forget me. It's a given. It was funny because I taught this once. I teach you about once a week back home. And somebody ran up to me in the grocery store and said, I know you. She said, you taught the class in angels and you said, I never remember you. But I remember you. She's the only one who's ever remembered. So I'm glad you're here and I hope that it enhances your faith as we study about who angels are and what they can do and how they reveal themselves to us. I want to read you a story because it comes from a book that started my whole interest in angel 8 years ago. Now the background of this story is that Diane is a young university student. She's come home from the university. She's meeting with friends. They're talking. It gets late. She lives in a small town. She has to walk home. And so she's walking home. And as she walked along under the tall elm trees, Diane asked God to keep her from harm and danger. When she reached the alley, which was a shortcut to her house, she decided to take it. However, halfway down the alley, she noticed a man standing at the end as though he were waiting for her. She became uneasy and shot up a prayer asking for God's protection. Instantly, a comfortable feeling of quietness and security surrounded her. She had the unmistakable sense that someone was walking with her. When she reached the end of the alley, she walked right past the man and arrived home safely. The following day, she read in the paper that a young girl had been raped in the alley that same day, just 20 minutes after she had been there. Diane thought she could possibly recognize the man and went down to the police station where she told her story. They asked her if she would be willing to look at a lineup to see if she could identify him. She agreed and immediately pointed to the man that she had seen in the alley the night before. She asked the policeman if he would ask him one question for her. She was curious to know why he had not attacked her. When the policeman asked him, the man answered, well, because she wasn't alone. There were two tall men walking on either side of her. This book, When Angels Appear, and it's the one that I asked the bookstore to please order, is the book that started my whole interest in angels. And it's written by a woman by the name of Hope McDonald. And I worked for Young Life for 2.5 years, and we spent a month together in a Young Life camp out in Colorado. And I had read her two previous books, One on Prayer and One on Obedience, and I loved them. And so when this came along, I just picked it up because I loved her as a woman of God. And, you know, in 1987, I'm reading this book, and I went, angels? You know, I don't know anything about angels. I've been a Christian my whole life. I went to Augustana College, where I had to take religion classes. I went to seminary for 2 summers. I worked for a Christian organization, and I don't know anything about angels. And here my friend is writing, and 2/3 of this book are stories of people who have had modern-day experiences with angels. And 1/3 is kind of who angels are and what they do and so on. So I thought, I love Hope McDonald, I trust her, I know she's a woman of God. But what does the Bible say about this? I don't know anything. So it was incredulous to me to know that the angels were mentioned 273 different times in the Bible. And I thought, it's in there that many times and I don't know anything about it. So in the summer of 1988, when my husband was teaching at the Young Life Institute, I sat down and looked up all 273 different references, wrote them all out longhand, and studied them. Because I thought, I need to know what the biblical perspective on angels is, not just modern-day stories. And it wasn't until I was all done that somebody said to me, Jeannie, don't you know there's a computer program that all you do is type in the word angels and it comes spewing out all those 273 things in 5 minutes? Well, I'm glad I didn't know, because I might have taken that easy way out. And as it was, I had to study the context of these stories and see kind of maybe why the angels were part of the stories that I read. I believe in angels today because the Bible explicitly says that they exist. Now, I'm not going to read a whole bunch of scriptures to you because you're Lutherans and you have read the Bible yourselves. But there's no place that we can go and get a complete description of who angels are. We have to get a piece there and a piece here. Psalm 103, for example, talks about angels moving at the hand of God. That God tells them what to do, they minister to him, they listen to his voice, and then they do what they're supposed to do. Hebrews 1, in the very last chapter in Hebrews, talks about their ministering spirits sent out to render service for those who will inherit eternal life. So again, we get a piece here and a bit there. We find out that they aren't given in marriage, they don't reproduce, that they don't have material bodies like we do, but they can take on material bodies. And all sorts of other things. And I guess what we'll do today is I'm going to give you definitions of angels, and then I'm going to tell you the jobs that they do. I'm going to make references to the biblical stories. I'm going to tell you stories of people that have had modern day experiences, and then kind of put it together. I'm going to talk fast, because usually I put this in an hour, and I'm going to try and reduce it to 45 minutes, so we also have time to have exchanges about your perspective on angels and anything you want to add to that. When I was doing my research, I thought, as a Lutheran, it was important to me to know if Martin Luther believed in angels. So I did my research, and it took me a while, but in one of his table talks, he says, an angel is the spiritual creature without a body, created by God for the service of Christendom and the church. So it was a relief to know that Martin did believe in angels. Billy Graham, usually I have stacks of books, but I decided I'm not bringing stacks of books and lugging them up the hill to hold it. So I've only brought a couple of books, but one of them, and the first one out, of course, Billy Graham's book is so old you can find it in garage sales. But his book says, angels belong to a uniquely different dimension of creation which we can scarcely comprehend. God has given angels higher knowledge, power, and mobility than he has given us. They are God's chief messengers whose chief business it is to carry out his orders. And then he says somewhere in the book, even one angel is indescribably mighty, as though an extension of the arm of God. And that's where I gave this title to today's session, because angels move at the command of God. We do angels a disservice to think, I know some of you are going to be disappointed in what I'm going to say next. because some of you have been looking forward to someday being an angel. I know, in the far, far future, but biblically, we don't become angels when we die. There's no place that it says it. It says we're going to get a spiritual body. But angels are their own unique created being. And we're not going to get to be one of those folks. There was an editor in one of our newspapers back home. I'm a chaplain in Davenport, Iowa. And a man went to interview a family whose seven-year-old daughter died of kidney disease. And this long front page article was, you know, why does a seven-year-old have to die of kidney disease? And he would give a reason, and of course that would be dashed against the rocks, and another reason. And finally, at the last thing in his article was, I guess little Susie Q died from this kidney disease, so you probably know what I'm going to say, so that God could have another little angel in heaven. Well, at the time, I wasn't brave enough or didn't take the time to write to him and say, excuse me, you ought not to stick your nose in theology because you don't have a clue here. People don't become angels when they die. And I guess the other reason it offended me so is because I don't believe in a God that plucks children out of the lives of their parents so he can add to his angel collection. So I was furious about this article, and that was the final reason that this wonderful little child died. The other thing that we want to dash against rocks is that angels are, and I usually have a stack of little children's books here and show you the cover, are what? Cute little blonde-haired, chubby-cheeked, seven-year-old boys with blonde hair, blue eyes, and a bowl cut. You've seen them, you know? They're all on the Christmas cards, right? And my idea of an angel, and I hope as we expand the idea of angels today, you'll see that they're probably not. And I'm not sure that would be very comforting to a seven-year-old boy with blonde hair to see that that's what an angel was. And I usually have some little figure that I show with that, but again, I didn't want to trudge it up the hill. So the only book that I found that was great, Focus on the Family has a couple good ones, but they do look like Cupids with blonde hair. But there was one book called, and every mother and grandfather wants to get this book for their children or grandchildren, were called Angels Are My Friends. And it was the one book where angels were the mighty characters that they are, and it was very biblically written about what angels do. And it is truly a good book. A little, what I thought would be 95-cent book that turned out to be $4, but are wonderful for children over four. So what do angels look like? Well, you're going to get bits and pieces today as we tell stories. The story that I just told you, the angel was really tall, like 7 feet tall. The people that have had angel experiences say they're exceedingly beautiful. They're exceedingly strong. They move very fast from one place to the other, but they're not omnipresent like God is, who can be in all places at all times. How many are there? Jesus said he could have called on 12 legions. Daniel said he saw 10,000 times 10,000. They can take on the form of human beings like they did with Sarah and Abraham. Just a few ideas of what angels are like. Angels have two primary purposes. Their purpose in heaven, as the scriptures tell us, are to praise and worship God. I decided I don't want to do research on that yet. I'll save that for another day, I hope long into my future. Their second job is to serve God, doing his work among us as human beings, and that's what we're going to talk about today. One of their jobs is as a messenger. Now, the word angel literally means messenger, but what they do is so much bigger than that is very confining. Okay. Good biblical Lutherans here. What are some of the stories, Old and New Testament, of angels that have brought messages?
Mary.
Yeah. Who else is it? Pardon me?
One of the angels saw the shepherds.
Okay. And told them to come to Bethlehem. Okay, what else? Telling Mary that she was going to be the mother of Christ child. I heard that. What else did I hear?
Abraham and Sarah,
they're going to have a child. Joseph, please go to Egypt to protect your child. Zachariah, Mary at the tomb. Jesus isn't here anymore, the message, Samuel's mother, and so on. The story that I want to share with you about a message now is a story, and the background of this is that Evelyn and Joe had been widowed, had East lost their spouse. They had found each other later in life. Joe was a doctor. He developed heart problems. And Joe was told, you got to slow down or, you know, this heart isn't going to make it. So he slowed down. He said, it's not enough. The heart damage is getting worse. You got to do something about this. Joe, you can either have heart surgery, but we don't even know if you're going to survive the heart surgery, or you're going to have a heart attack, and we don't even know if, you know, if not having this surgery would be better, having it, you know, make this decision. It was a terrible decision to have to make. They were discussing it. They went to sleep that night after they had been given this message and this unfortunate news, and Evelyn awoke aware of a strong presence standing beside their bed. For an instant, the room became aglow. Every part of it was filled with an all-encompassing light. Often when there's an angel experience, there's this wonderful light. You'll hear about it again today. Accompanied by a feeling of enormous gladness, she remembers thinking this must be a glimpse of what heaven is like. She knew it was an angel standing by her bed and was not surprised when the angel spoke to her. Message: your husband is stronger than you think. He is God's child. Do not fear. End of message. Full of wonder, she woke up her husband and told him what had happened. After talking over in great detail, they said a prayer of thanksgiving. When they finished, they were too excited to go back to sleep. I think that's an understatement. An awesome quiet filled the room. Then the angel was gone, and there was a quiet, peaceful feeling. They both dropped off to sleep. A week later, when he went in again, tests showed that the damaged artery had been closed off and a bypass had naturally occurred. They had many more wonderful years together. Given a message, and the message, of course, came. The other job that an angel has is one of protector. And for the sake of going on quickly, the stories you would have told me are, for example, Paul, he was facing shipwreck, he was protected, and the most famous one probably Daniel in the lion's den, and you would give me many, many more. The story I'm going to share with you about that is a story I share not because it's all that spectacular, but because five people all saw the same thing. Now, when we talk with people who don't really want to believe in angels, they say, well, you know, they were probably sleeping when they had this, or they were probably taking drugs, or, you know, they were hallucinating or whatever. Well, this family of five all saw the same thing. And the background of this story was that these folks lived in North Dakota, and Mom and Dad had to go to town. This was 50 years ago, and I guess when Mom and Dad had to go to town in North Dakota, they had to stay overnight because town was so far away. So John was left in charge of the four little brothers and sisters. So he fed them dinner. They lived in a great big old farmhouse that didn't have electricity, and took them upstairs to get them ready for bed. They were all getting ready for bed when suddenly John looked over at his two-year-old brother, and to his horror and amazement, he was playing with a lighted candle. He was sticking unlit matches into it and watching with glee as they burst into flames. Before John could rush to his brother's side, the candle tipped over and the fire began to spread up the drapes. No one can explain why, but in the middle of all this, the children looked over at the door. There they saw a tall, beautiful angel standing in the doorway. The angel simply blew out the fire, turned around, and left down the hall. All the children ran down the hall after it, but the angel was gone. Now, the brothers and sisters are married and have children of their own, but when they get together, they often talk about the time they saw the angel blow out the fire that cold winter night. Five people. And I think when a person has an angel experience, and I would be able to verify this in all the stories people have told me, it makes such a mark on their lives, they never forget that they were somehow protected and touched. The next story I want to tell you comes from a gentleman, and I told this story here 4 years ago, or gave this talk, Tim Wolbrick, who some of you may know. He's from the Tacoma area. He's an ordained minister, and he's a psychologist and does Christian counseling. And I give him this talk, and he comes and says, Jeannie, I got to tell you my angel story. He said, I was working my way through seminary in Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And he said, to work my way through, I was cleaning offices at night. And he said, it was one of those wonderful Minnesota nights where, and he said, it had been snowing all day. One of that blanket of snow that just came down with no wind and just piled up the snow. He said, I finished my work about 11:30 at night and went out to take the bus home. And he said, it was just a wonderland. He said, I was downtown, I was standing at the bus station waiting for my bus. He said, there wasn't a soul around. But between two buildings and out of an alley came this absolutely gigantic man. And he said, he came out of that alley, saw me, and came straight to me. And he said, just his walk was menacing. He said, I was scared to death. He said, so I looked to the left and looked to the right and tried to find, you know, an open bar or a drugstore or a policeman or a bus or any human being. or sign of life. And he said there was nothing in any direction. And he said, I got more and more frightened. Because by now, he was really close, and he said, I could see his eyes. And they were horrible. He said they were eyes of anger and threatening. And he said, I knew that I was in trouble. And he said, as he got from about me to you, he said his eyes got absolutely huge because he was looking past me. He said, it was a look of fear and horror. And he said, as afraid as I was of him, he said, I had to see what he was looking at because I knew he was looking past me. He said, so I turned around, and there behind me was a teeny little bag lady covered with layers and layers of clothing and two little bags that she had standing in the snow right behind me. And he said, now Tim Wolbrick isn't any taller than me. So for a gentleman, that's not large. And he said, the lady was even littler than I was. And he said, I thought, holy smokes. But he said, in one swoop, this guy was so big that he could have, you know, backhanded the both of us and we'd be out cold. He said, so I turned to look at this guy who I knew would be now upon me. And he said, he was running as fast as he could from whence he came. He said, so I turned around. Because I thought, what is going on here? And I turned around to see this bag lady, thinking, what did she do to scare him like that? And she's gone. She's totally and completely gone. Now, what was the scene that I set? It was snowing. He said, so I turned around and looked in the snow, and there was not a mark of this lady or her two bags. Or any footprints going away or coming to. He said, there was the footprints that I had when I came to stand here at the station, and the footprints of this gentleman running off. He said, so I was running in all of the entryways of all of these stores, and she wasn't there. And my question to him is probably the same thing you're going to ask. What did that guy see? You know, he didn't see a little bag lady covered with layers and layers of clothing who was half the size of Tim Wolbrick. You know, he must have seen one of these 7-foot, you know, Michael in all his armor sort of thing. And he said, Jeannie, he said, ever since that incident, he said, I have believed in angels. And when I saw him Saturday when we came in on the boat, I said, Tim, I need to tell you that I'm telling your story. And he said, do you give me credit? I said, yes, I even use your name. He said, good. He said, even now, and I don't know how old Tim is, I suppose he's 40, he said, I get shivers when I think of that experience. And again, I say, people who've been touched never forget that God has touched them in that beautiful and personal way. So a story of protection. Another thing that angels do is that they minister to us. The stories of ministry in the Bible are when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he had been praying and an angel came and ministered to him afterwards, or when he had been out in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights. Elijah, when he was fleeing from the wicked Queen Jezebel, was ministered to. I think this is a good place to say we never want to confuse, however, the Holy Spirit and angels. The Holy Spirit ministers to us spiritually, and angels minister to us physically. So the Holy Spirit ministers in us, and angels minister to us. At times that angels minister to us are times of illness and at times of death. A story that I want to share with you, I didn't bring, as I said, all these books, but out of the book, A Book of Angels by Sophie Burnham, which I got like a month after the book came out. She wrote a book on angels, and then, of course, it came out at Christmas because that's the only time people think of Christmas, right? I refuse to give this talk during December, I want you to know, because I say it's not a Christmas talk. But then the next Christmas, all these people were invited to write to her about their angel story. So next Christmas, she came out with another book called Letters About Angels or something. But this comes out of her book, and the reason I love this story, there's many reasons, but one of them, it takes place in Waterloo, Iowa, and I happen to live in Bettendorf, Iowa, and the other one is that it's a Lutheran, and you'll understand the significance when I tell this story. The story is that this was in 1947, and this woman was like 4 years old. She was a small child, and she caught the measles, and her temperature got up to 107. And all of us who are mothers and fathers know at 107, we take our kids straight to the emergency room because we know this is disastrous. So she said, She remembered the nurses and doctors moving around quickly, wrapping me up in ice cold wet blankets in the hospital bed. My mother told me that prior to this, as she brought her in and so on, she was delirious. And suddenly, she said, I started speaking clearly. I was saying the Nicene Creed and repeating the liturgy from our Lutheran worship service. How old did I say she was? Four. How many of you keep your hymnal open for the Nicene Creed and the liturgy? I mean, this kid's four. I taught confirmation. I had seventh graders, eighth graders, and ninth graders. I can guarantee not one of them knew the Nicene Creed perfectly. She said it frightened her because she wasn't aware that I knew the words and I was saying them perfectly. Then, she said, then I started talking about the angels and how beautiful they were. I have a clear recollection, she says, of floating up in the corner of the hospital room with an angel on either side, watching the doctors and nurses working on me. To this day, I can close my eyes and I can hear the music, which cannot be described, and see those two beings in white with a golden aura around them. There was an opening in the ceiling and a long lighted path, and all golden. They asked me if I wanted to go with them or if I wanted to stay. You're going to love this next line, moms. And I clearly remember saying, I wanted my mother. You're going to love it. And I was back in the hospital bed and they were gone. Now, the other reason I tell you this story is the very next paragraph. And this is what this whole study of 8 years has done for me. I guess the most profound effect is the effect of... I guess the most profound effect this experience has had on me is that it has taken away all fear of death. I know there's a life after death, she says, because I have seen it. I have read I don't know how many books now that angels are an in and trendy thing. And I don't know how many experiences I could recount that people have told me. But I know this is one thing that has done for me. Is that as a hospital chaplain for 9 years, and that I work with people who are dying, and I'll be telling you about one of those experiences now, I can stand at a bedside and rejoice because I know where these folks are going. Because I, too, have glimpses of the other side through the eyes of those who have had experiences like this and been brought back, or who have passed to the other side. Billy Graham talks about his maternal grandmother dying. And in it he said, his book says, hundreds of accounts record the heavenly escort of angels at death. When my maternal grandmother died, for instance, the room became filled with a heavenly light, again the light. She sat up in bed and almost laughingly said, I see Jesus, and he has his arms outstretched to me. And then she said, and I see Ben. Ben was her husband who had died previous to her. And I see the angels. She slumped over, absent from the body, but present with the Lord. I believe that angels are there at times of death. And I'll read you this just because I don't think you can't read, but in case you can't see it. We can't help that, Mr. Giebner, after all, you've had well over 70 years to make out your will. And of course, he's protesting that he's not ready, not having done it. Oh, I did want to show you this, which I totally forgot. But I was telling you that we aren't angels. Well, the Lutheran magazine, you can see this, the light side, so some of you know this is the Lutheran magazine, put this out, I don't know how many years ago, and again, I didn't take the time to write to them, but I did write to them a couple months ago, but they haven't put my letter in, because I said, especially these at the bottom, you know, everybody who's died gets what? A halo and two angel wings. And so, of course, even the Lutheran magazine is perpetuating, you know, the myth that we become angels when we die. So I did write to them finally. If you ever see my letter in there, I doubt it'll get printed because I said to them, and you'll be seeing some of my cartoons later, I said if, what's the cartoon called that I'm going to use later? It's the Family Circus. If Family Circus artist is smart enough to know not to put halos and wings on people who have died, the Lutheran magazine ought to be theologically correct enough not to put halos and wings on people who have died. So I don't know if they were so offended they won't put my letter in or what, but anyway, if you see it, you'll know it finally got in. Jesus talks about when the Lazarus, who was the beggar and covered with sores, died. And Jesus said that when Lazarus died, he was escorted on the wings of angels to the bosom of Abraham. Those of you who might be Shakespeare fans know that in the last line of Hamlet, we also hear about escorting angels who minister to us at times of death. Hamlet is dying in the arms of his best friend, and his best friend says, "Good night, sweet prince," and angels are there ministering to us at times of death and bringing us to our heavenly kingdom. As a hospital chaplain, my job basically is to be a listening, caring presence. I'm not so much a sacramental minister chaplain because I'm not ordained, so I don't bring communion to people. I do baptisms, but mostly what I do is sit at the bedside of someone who is sick, or sit with a family, if the person, for example, is in a coma or unable to talk, and allow them to talk and share their stories. And in that process, we believe that there is healing in sharing one's story and one pain. One day I was called into a woman's room by the name of Connie. Connie belonged to a Lutheran church. She had cancer. She was coming in for pain control, and the pain was awful. Unfortunately, she was estranged from her church. Her minister was not calling on her through this journey of trying to deal with her cancer. The minister was not there for the family. I don't know what the problem was. So when I was invited in, she and her husband just opened themselves up to their story, their pain, what their family was going through. She was in her 30s, had three children. The short story is, Connie never left the hospital. The pain got bad, the cancer increased, and Connie stayed there. She had gone into a coma, it is not my practice to go to the hospital when it is my day off. The only way I can be a chaplain for 9 years and to not burn out with working and mostly with cancer and AIDS patients is that I set boundaries up. And I don't go in on my days off. But this was Sunday, and I knew that Connie had such a big family, and they were, whenever I went up to see them, there was from 15 to 25 people there for Connie, even though she was in a coma. And they knew she was dying. And I thought, the minister isn't going to come up. I'll just stop up. So I went and I kind of did a little bedside service, and we included Connie even though she was in a coma. We made a circle. I read some scriptures. We said some prayers. I just kind of touched base with the family. As I was doing that, her sister said to me, "Jean, I know this sounds absolutely stupid," but she said, and she started to cry, "One of the things I'm upset about is here we are for Connie in Mass, 15 to 25 of us, you know. We're all here for Connie, but only Connie can die her own death. We can be here for her, but she's got to do that alone." And she just wept. And I said, "You know, I don't usually share this with patients, but it seems appropriate here. But I happen to know a little bit about angels. And one of the things that I believe that they do for us is that they're there for us and help us in our transition from this world to the next." And I said, "If it would be comforting to you, we could ask God to send an escort angel, if you will, to be with Connie in that time of transition." And as I looked around, the family was nodding in agreement. And so we got in the circle again and did this again. And I don't know what prayer I prayed, but put it together in that way. The next morning I came in at 8 and I got a phone call immediately. And they said, "Chaplain, you need to know that Connie died last night, but we think you should come up because the body is still here." So I came up, and I've been a chaplain for 9 years, and I'm very comfortable with death. The first time I held a woman while she died was a little overwhelming, but since that time, and I teach another class, which I'll be teaching next week, called Gifts and Blessings for and from the Dying, I've learned a whole lot about how to help someone in that beautiful process, which I will talk about in that class. But I walked in that room, and Connie was laid out in this bed, and I literally went like this. I gasped as I looked at Connie. Because on the face of this young woman was the most beautiful smile I have ever seen on a non-living human being. People just don't have smiles like this. And I turned to her brother-in-law, who was a Hawaiian, who had stayed with the body. And he's a Christian, but in his Hawaiian culture, it's the tradition to stay with the body because they don't believe that the spirit leaves right away. And so I turned to him and I said, "There must be a story here." And he said, yes. He said, you know, we were here all in mass. I don't know how many of us, 15, 20. And he said, about 5 o'clock, the nurse told us that we were losing Connie. And so we gathered around her bed. And we did what you told us to. We climbed in bed with her, and we touched her, and we talked to her, and we talked to her. And he said, she'd been in a coma, of course, for 3 days, and she had her eyes closed. But she said, as her blood pressure was dropping, we knew that we were losing her, she all of a sudden opened up her eyes, looked over the top, he said with a smile, over all of us who have been standing here for 3 to 5 days. And he said, looked right past us, turned her head, and looked into the corner of the room, and she smiled. And then she died. And he said, that's the smile that you see on her face. And he said, the family rejoiced because they knew that Connie hadn't died alone. And he said, it's brought such peace to the family. The funny part of the story is that the people from the funeral home came about a half an hour after I had been there, and they saw Connie, and they looked at the brother-in-law, and they said, how'd the hospital do that and make her smile like that? The brother-in-law just smiled and said, the hospital didn't do that. So he knew the story of how it did happen. We've had many instances, and I will cut that part short perhaps, of children who have seen angels outside of their windows. And there's one story that I will tell you quickly. You're not supposed to have favorite patients, but Tisha was absolutely my favorite patient. She was 9 years old, she was dying of cancer. And in the time I knew her, when she was getting chemotherapy and radiation, I knew her probably over a period of a year and saw her mother once. Does that give you an idea of Connie's family? I heard Connie talk, or Tisha's her name, talking on the phone, telling her mother kind of how to organize her life. So you get the idea of who's the parent in this family. One day I was getting dressed, and as a chaplain I always wear kind of sport coats or skirts with pockets in them, because I'm carrying my list of patients and oil and my pencils and that sort of thing. So I always have pockets. Well, as I was getting dressed that morning, I saw on my dresser, you know, one of those angel cards that people wear on their collars? Well, I had bought one. Now, this was years ago, before a lot of people wore angels on their collars. But I had bought one. It had been sitting there collecting dust for 9 months on my dresser. And I, for reasons that I can only say are the Holy Spirit, picked that thing up and put it in my pocket. I don't have any other explanation because I had had it for 9 months. I got to the hospital, I got a phone call and said, you better come straight up. Tisha's having nightmares. So I went up to the pediatric unit, and the nurse said, I don't know what's wrong with her. She's having nightmares. She's really upset. So I knock on Tisha's room and ask permission to come in. Tisha said, I said, how you doing, Tisha? She said, well, not so good. And I said, you want to tell me about it? She said, yes, but I'm going to tell you right now, I wasn't dreaming. I said, I got that straight. You were not dreaming. So I asked permission to sit down. I said, do you want to tell me about it? She said, yes. She said, I saw this person in a dark hat, no face, a dark trench coat, dark pants, and dark shoes. And she said, and it wasn't a dream. So it wasn't a dream. I said, is there more to the story? And she said, not really. I said, well, did this person talk to you? No. And I said, well, if it didn't talk to you, do you have a feeling? How did it make you feel? She said, I didn't like it at all. I said, is there anything else that was part of this thing that wasn't a dream? And she said, yes. And then her face just got brilliant and smiled. And she said, yes. There was this other thing. It was all in white. She said, so white, it was as white as my hospital gown. And I looked at that, thought, well, that wasn't terribly white. And then she thought again. And she said, no, Jeannie, it was as white as lightning. And then I got the picture. And I said, well, did this person talk to you? She said, no. I said, well, how did it make you feel? What did it look like? She said, she was beautiful. And it made me feel so good. Now I said, Tisha, I know you're a Christian. She said, oh yes, she said. She was from the Church of the Nazarene. She said, oh yes, she said, I believe in Jesus. And I said, now I didn't know what I knew, what I know now about dying, and I would have handled this different then, but I knew Tisha was dying, but I didn't know if Tisha knew Tisha was dying. So I said, Tisha, I think that person that you saw in white, that being, was your guardian angel. And I said, you know, I believe that guardian angels watch over us. And I said, whether we're here, you know, on earth just living life, or whether we're moving from this life to the next, that angel's there with us. And she nodded very knowingly. And I said, and I just happened to have a guardian angel in my pocket. I said, and if you'd like it, I'd like to give you that to affirm that you've been blessed today. She said, oh, I'd like that. She said, pin it on my gown. Well, for the next week, no matter what Tisha had on, a t-shirt or a gown, that was, she commanded the nurses to put it on the next piece of clothing. A week later, I got a phone call in the middle of the night, and it said, Chaplain, no, you're not on call tonight, but Tisha's dying. Her family wants you here. I won't go into that whole story. But again, this poor family had no idea what to do when someone was dying. So I told them what to do, and when we realized we were losing her, I said, gather around her, put her in your arms, hold her. Now, Tisha had had, her eyes were open but not seeing anything, and her eyes for about 24 hours had been this look of absolute terror and anxiety, but she wasn't seeing any of us. Her eyes were just open, but she was not responding to any of us. She died, and her father came over to me in a couple of moments later and said, did you see Tisha's face when she died? And I said, no, I didn't feel it was my place to be that close to Tisha since there were so many family members here. Besides that, I had turned down some of the lights in the room. He said, I think you should know that that look of fear and anxiety left her. And then I quote, and then the father said, and all of a sudden that look left. She looked at us, then she looked up into the corner of the room and she smiled. And of course I had heard that story before. And he said, I want you to know how much that pin meant to Tisha. And she told us in all her seven-year-old knowledge, put it on me later, Daddy. And so Tisha, in probably the only new dress she had ever worn, I saw at her visitation 2 days later wearing that guardian angel pin. Dr. Melvin Morris, who is a pediatrician, wrote the book Closer to the Light. And he noticed as he was caring for children how many of them had angel experiences in their either terminal or chronic or kind of catastrophic illnesses, and wrote a book which is very, very good about those experiences. A story that goes along with that, or a job that goes along with that, are when angels are guardians. And the scripture that people love the most, and especially when we use with children, are Psalm 91, For he will give his angels charge concerning you, to guard you in all your ways. They will bear you up in their hands, lest you strike your foot against a stone. And I love the, as I said, family circus, because they're always coming up with cartoons I can use. It puts the kid to bed. They say angels hover near when a child is sleeping. Sounds nice. I wonder if it's true. There's something flying around in my room, and it woke me up. And of course, she's getting ready for bed and says, I have to leave plenty of room for my guardian angel and those big wings. Children are more prone to believe in angels than us adults. There's a story about one little kid who's being put to bed and he doesn't want to go to sleep, and he wants mom to read to him and rub my back and read me, you know, all the things that kids do, so we won't leave. And the mom's getting frustrated because she wants to go spend some time with dad. And the kid finally says, "I'm scared. That's why you can't leave me. I'm scared." And Mom, in exasperation, says, "Billy, you don't need to be scared. There's a guardian angel that's sitting on the edge of your bed, right down there at the foot, who is watching over you all night long." And Billy sits up in bed and he looks at the end of the bed and he looks back at his mother and he said, "I'd much rather have somebody with skin on it." When I was doing all of this study about angels, I was reading stories to my then young, much younger boys about guardian angels and about the angel stories that Hope had in her book. And they had their favorites, and I'd read them over and over again. But I want you to know that when I have a guardian angel and picture this angel looking over my sons, I want it to look like this. My boys now, and I say this with fear and trembling, are 18 and 19. And this is the first time this woman has left them home for 3 weeks all alone. You know, that's how I feel. You know, like the little kid in the movie, you know, that's a nice house I have at home. And I'm kind of frightened about 18 and 19-year-old boys watching over it. Not to mention that they have to go to work and drive a car and all this sort of thing. So when I pray for my boys several thousand times a day while I'm up here, this is the angel that I have watching over them, and then I've asked the Lord to kind of have a troop around the house. It's the only way that I could come up here to tell you the honest and goodness truth. But ever since they were little, I would say to them, "You're out playing soccer, you're riding your bike, you're driving the car, you have friends in the car. I'm not there to protect you with my arms anymore. So I want you to know that what I do for you is that I pray that an angel watches over you." When I was in Arizona 2 years ago and my son had the van full of five other teenagers without their seatbelts on, and he was fiddling with the tape deck and hit the edge of the road in a strip of concrete an inch, kept him from going plunging into the creek bed. And that little piece of concrete got him at least to the embankment where he totaled the car with all five other teenagers in it, and not one of them had a scratch. And my husband went out to pick him up in my little car and said, "You know, your mother prays that a guardian angel," and my son finished the sentence and said, "And truly it was here today." This is the place that I want to say, and what I say to my boys is, the scriptures tell us in Colossians 2 and in Revelations 22, we don't pray to angels. And this is the place where I say that's what makes us different than the New Agers. Somebody said, "Oh, gee, there's a new book about angels," so I tripped on out to get it. This is when they were far and few between. And went to get the book called Ask Your Angel. Ask Your Angel. Well, I should have known by the topic or the title of the book. I went thumbing through the book as I was walking to pay for it. God wasn't mentioned. Jesus wasn't mentioned. The scriptures weren't mentioned. And I realized what I had in my hand was a New Age book. The New Agers pray to angels, asking angels to do things for them, and kind of are at their command. And the scriptures tell us that angels work at the command of God. And when I say to my kids, if you find yourselves in trouble, you don't pray to that angel. You pray to God and ask Him for the help and protection that you need. Do guardian angels take days off? I mean, this kid's had a terrible day. We've seen in heaven, our kids look like that. Metaphorically, we look like that some days, and it's been awful day for him. You can see what he's been through. He's so bedraggled. But the serious part of that, and you're asking yourself, some of you, as you sit out there, is what about the time my child really got hurt? What about the time my child died? Or my spouse died? Or something happened to disable a person that I love? Or my house burned, or whatever happened. You know, where was their guardian angel? And I struggled as I put this study together 8 years ago with this. I think about Daniel in the lion's den, great story. But then I think about the hundreds of Christians in the early years of Christianity that were thrown in the Roman Colosseums and eaten by lions. I think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, thrown into Nebuchadnezzar's fiery furnace, probably didn't even smell like smoke, right? Came out, you know, not smelling like smoke, not eaten up, but I think of 6 million Jews and how many, quote, righteous Gentiles, homosexuals, mentally retarded that were thrown into the Nazi concentration camp furnaces. Jews believe in angels. Michael is the archangel of the Jews. So where was their angel? I think about Elijah. He went to the wilderness. He got a little hungry. He was there for 40 days and 40 nights. So an angel came along and baked him a little cake and sustained him. But I look at the news, and I look at the things on TV, and I see how many children are starving. And I think, where's their guardian? I was a chaplain for Candlelighters, which is a support group for parents whose children have cancer. I was their chaplain for 6 years. Michelle Ikes, I never saw her, but she did have a little guardian angel pin on her collar, as did her mother. And at 7 years old, Michelle died of her cancer. I looked at the scriptures and I saw that Jesus did miracles. He resurrected Lazarus and the young man whose mother would have only had him. And I see the miracles that were performed in the Old and New Testament. And I think God does intervene, but only sometimes. Angels do come, but why here and not there? And I think one of the answers is that God, for the most part, wants the extraordinary to happen through the ordinary. What do I mean by that? You come from congregations, or some of you are Stephen's ministers, some of you are befrienders, some of you are deacons, some of you are hospital callers, some of you belong to circles, some of you do outreach in a variety of ways. You build houses through Habitat for Humanity, you work in the soup kitchen, you do all sorts of things. You become the hands of Christ for other human beings. And the extraordinary love and compassion that Christ wants comes through the ordinary, comes through our hands. The other reason I think that we can't depend on it is just for that reason. If we expected angels to become and doing things for us, that's what we'd be expecting. And God doesn't work that way. I don't understand the mind and the heart of God. I don't understand the plan. And I guess that's the bottom line, is that question is not answerable. Two quick things that I want to say, and that's the gentle way that angels seem to do their work. They slip into a situation, do what they're supposed to do, and slip out again. You know, they don't go kind of ta-da and wait for the bow. They do what they need to do and disappear. I mean, how many hundreds of stories have I read of somebody, you know, they topple over in their sailing boat out in the ocean and they're floundering because they don't have a life jacket on, and somebody comes along and picks them up with a lifesaver hold and they're dragged ashore and they turn around to thank this lifeguard who's been there and there's nobody for miles around. Or somebody, a mom or dad, watches their kid being picked up and moved out of the way of an oncoming car, an oncoming train, and the parent rushes to pick up the child and turn to thank the stranger, and there's no one for blocks around. And in the beginning, when I did this research, and there weren't that many books, I came to the conclusion that the reason they come in so gently and disappear so quickly is so we can't thank them. So we turn to the God that dispatched them and give our thanks where the thanks are due. The other thing I want to say quickly is that before angels became trendy, I mean, even now they've been in Newsweek, they've been in Time magazine, they've been on a cover of Wall Street Journal of all places. You know, Guidepost has always had them, Life magazine's had them. Now I guess there's a TV program, which I haven't seen, but they're everywhere right now. Now people share their stories and are willing to do that. But when I started this 8 years ago, people would come up to me and say, gee, I've never told anybody this except my spouse. Or I've never told anybody about this except my pastor. And then they tell me the most beautiful account. But the reason people were hesitant then, and are still somewhat hesitant, is, first of all, people were afraid to tell their angel stories. Can't you just hear it? I think Mildred must have been taking some kind of little red pills or something. She's been talking about some white figure in her bedroom that's been talking to her. Or, you know, she's been telling us about this thing. Don't you think she's losing it? Do you think it's a mental illness? I mean, can't we just hear people talking 8 years ago? people just didn't share those stories. But I think the other reason people didn't share those stories is because it was such an intimate encounter with God. And they knew that they had had that encounter, that they didn't have to share it. They knew they had been touched personally by the hand of God. And that's all that they needed. They didn't need to convince anyone. Lutherans are pretty comfortable with Jesus, with God. We get over here to the Holy Spirit and we're not quite as comfortable. We get over here to angels and, you know, before a couple years ago when all this came out, you know, it was really, that's why I said, I don't know if they read my announcement this morning, but this was a class for all Protestants. Because Catholics know a whole lot more about angels than we Protestants have. So the bottom line of one reason that I put this all together is because after reading, hearing, and believing all these angel stories, the Old Testament, New Testament, and the stories that have been told to me, it has expanded my faith. It has given a whole new dimension to me of how much a loving, caring, active, personal God loves us. You know, and what is faith? Faith isn't believing in the tangible, but it's believing in the intangible. And I think angels are one more way that the intangible God expresses him or herself to us in a very personal and intimate way. So I think in a way, angels are a signature and as I said today, an extension of the arm of God. So as you read scriptures, as you look at things in your own life, either things that have happened to you or things that may happen yet in the future, and as you pray for your children, for yourselves, for those in your family, I hope this all takes on a new perspective because perhaps there has been a touch of an angel in your own life. So again, I'll say, you'll probably forget me, but I hope that you won't forget, you know, what we have exchanged today. I know I've only left 5 minutes, but I'm open for questions, answers, statements, whatever you have.
How would you, in your experience, when you have these stories to share that the families have said to you, they looked up in the corner with a smile, do you think there's any danger in people knowing that these things have happened and then being in that experience and
not having it happen? Oh, yeah.
I mean, what would you say? Well, how would you comfort somebody who has said, you know, the angel never came?
And the fact is, I mean, here I teach this class, I've never had an angel experience that I know of, you know. Oh, great. Well, you know. But, yeah, that's... And what if something does happen to my children when I'm here? There's 3 weeks. Will I say, great Scott, I teach the class, God, and you let me down? You know, there's a real danger in that. And I don't know the answer. And I, the answer I would give is that angels are invisible. And the fact that some people have been given a glimpse, and some of us may believe that we are washed over by angels, but never see them. And never have that affirmation, if you will. I mean, the scriptures talk about them 273 different things. I don't think they're a metaphor, you know. And I need to say that I teach this from my perspective. There are theologians out here, pastors out here, that would teach it from another perspective. I teach it from the perspective of someone who said, I don't know anything about this, so I need to know. And I teach it from the perspective of being a hospital chaplain. But somebody else who's a PhD in theology, they look at it, you know, differently too. So I need to share that. So I don't know. Except that we don't always see what is present. Anything else? If not, you know what your stomach's
doing. What about the times when we sort of prove up and say,
my
guardian angel must have been watching over me. I have had times when I've been responsible for something that was supposed to happen. It was completely gone from my mind. And just in the nickel of time, I've remembered and done it and been saved. And I say, my word, thank heaven for my guardian angel. So am I talking about something else?
You know, the bottom line is we don't have all the answers to that. Yes, it definitely could be. Maybe it's just a good memory that finally clicked in.
Maybe it's just a subconscious.
But I think we are touched more by the Holy Spirit and angels and heavenly beings than we ever give credit to. And I guess that's one reason that even now we're so inundated with all this angel stuff. I'm willing to do this, you know, one more time, though. I think this might be my, I keep saying, this is my last time we're doing this. But I think we do need to be aware that God is so much bigger than we give him credit for being, and touches our lives in more intimate ways than we ever, ever know. Because God is spirit, and that spirit does touch us in ways that... Thank you. I'll let you go to lunch.